Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
We're just trying to get it together, trying to help the fellow man. And we can make it better. Do you really think we can?
Yes. Yes, here we are again, Tuesday, and it's time for Blog Talk Radio, The Catch at Blog Talk Radio, where we talk about faith and life. We like to talk about where faith and life connect. And when I say life, I mean the marketplace. I mean real life. I mean how we live every day and where we live. We're not talking about religion here and or religious things. We're talking about faith meeting up with our everyday existence. And we're gonna have fun today. We're gonna talk tonight mainly about music, and this is a new relationship for me. I just met up with our guest when I was on his show a few days ago, and he has a show on internet radio called First Flight Radio, and he interviewed me and talked a lot about the original days of Christian music. And so when we were done, I said, look, why don't I have you on my show, and I'll interview you. So that's what we're going to do, because he's been in radio pretty much most of his career, and especially Christian radio, and has some really great insights for us, I believe. And so we're looking forward to getting to know Gary Flory and finding out just some of the experiences that he has had in his life with Christian music and with radio and the like. So, Gary, welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Well, John, thanks for having me on the show. It's good to talk to one of the guys that I grew up admiring, because not just because of your music, because of your writing, because I fell in love with your books and everything. So,
cool.
It's good to talk to somebody who had an impact on my spiritual growth back in the 80s.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you. Now, Gary was sharing with me that he came to the Lord in 1981, which which means that he was not a Christian during the heyday of the Jesus movement, which really, you know, I think of the Jesus movement as being between around 1968 and 72. I put it about 4-year span in there. It went further. A lot of people think of it going much further than that, but those were the critical years that I like to think of, mainly because you never knew what was going to happen. It was definitely a Holy Spirit-led movement among young people all over the world. It was not just California, and it was not just America. It was all over the world. I've been in Sweden. I've been in South Africa, and all places around in Europe, and they all had stories about what went on during those 4 years, 1968 to 1972. Now, that's when Christian music began. My first album was out in 69. There was nobody doing it. There were no albums out. Larry Norman came out in 70, and so... And then 70, 71, 72, there was an explosion of new music. But all of that was really early, brand new, early music about life and about faith, and in contemporary terms. It had never been done before. It was a brand new venue, and that's what made it exciting. It's interesting to me that our guest, Gary Flory, was not a Christian during those years. And my first question has to do with, what did he have any sense that there was something going on, even though he was not on the inside? What would you say about that, Gary?
I would say you're absolutely 100% correct. I knew what was going on. I grew up, my mom and dad and my brother, we all grew up believing in God. I knew there was a God. I knew Jesus was his son. I never made that step for the commitment, but I remember going to Sunday school when we lived in New Jersey before we moved to Ohio. We went to a Reformed Presbyterian church on Sunday. In fact, the Bible they gave me when I was 8 years old there, I still have.
Wow.
it's a great keepsake. So I knew who Jesus was. I knew who God was. But for years, I didn't make that spiritual connection. What was the influence that I saw about what I came to be known as the Jesus movement? Two things. First of all, in 1969 and 1970, you started hearing songs like "Oh Happy Day" for the Edwin Hawkins Center, yeah, singers making, yep, the charts.
Mm-hmm.
Pacific Gas and Electric's "Are You Ready?"
Huh?
In the summer of 1970. No way you could not say that was a Jesus. It was.
Yep.
Even Billy Preston, "That's the Way God Planned It," 1969 on Apple. So, I remember those songs. You know, we all listened to them. They're great songs. And then I remember hearing "Put Your Hand in the Hand" by Ocean and,
yep,
other bands like that. Then, of course, "Jesus Christ Superstar," that hit the airwaves. And of,
yep,
course, the song "Superstar" Murray Head did, that got airplay everywhere. So we knew it was there, and I knew what was going on, paid,
yeah,
cursory attention to it, but you couldn't help but think about some things. But
yeah,
the two things I noticed.
Spirit in the sky, and mm-hmm, and Peter, Paul, and Mary were singing "Everybody Gonna Pray" on the very last day. I could
That's
never.
That's right, yep.
That one totally blew me away. They're singing about the Judgment Day, and it was a popular, mm-hmm, song. And
yep.
What a wild thing.
It was a crazy time. But the other,
yeah,
two big examples to me were two people in my junior high school in the 1970. We were all in the ninth grade in the 71. One of them was a young lady who, unfortunately, you know, she was only like 13, 14 years old. She was already having problems with drugs and everything, and she was a real mess. A guy there was a big bully. Well, in a few weeks' time, something happened to them because suddenly – she wasn't on drugs anymore, and he was acting nice to everybody, and I found out later. Well, when she autographed my yearbook that year, you know, when you're leaving junior high to go to high school, you get your yearbook, and she said, "Keep your eyes on Jesus."
Wow.
And it's like, oh, that's what happened. So
wow.
Yeah, she got saved, and late 1970, and this other guy, he was, like I said, a real big lumbering bully, and suddenly he was changed and different, and he didn't sign anything like that, but he just said, "I hope you have a great life, and I have a great life now in God," and that's what he told me that one, huh?
Oh,
okay, so, you know, God's doing something there. And we had some time. There were people I knew that were part of Young Life. I was invited to some of their Sunday night get-togethers, casual get-togethers, where they'd talk about the Bible and pray about things. And that was, you know, it was pretty cool. I like these people. They're good people. And we had a good time talking. And they asked me what I thought about God. And I said, well, he's there. And I believe Jesus died and rose from the dead. But I never made a pronouncement saying, you know, I want him to come and forgive me. Real quickly, what turned me off? And there was a point that turned me off. And I mentioned it. We were attending a church in out visiting relatives in Western Ohio in mid late 71, and the pastor was introducing a new family that joined the church, become members. One of them was a black family, and and a person who was very acted, very pious, and very, very spiritual, said, "I can't believe they're letting the N-word into our church."
Mm.
And my brother and I heard that, and I walked out and I told him, "I don't have nothing to do with God." And I said, this is the kind of junk we see. And I basically just turned away for a while. I mean, even my parents were like, "I can't believe everybody said that." The deed was done. And I'm like, you know what? Other times I'd seen other people in churches acting very hypocritical. At times, people would do stuff, and I remember somebody telling me, about Jesus being so good, then, they're out down in, beers and everything else. They're underage and chugging beers down. I'm going, there's no difference. So I thought, hey, I'm no different than anybody else. I'll just be fine. So I just went on. Didn't care.
Yeah, wow.
Yep.
So our lives are very important. And mm-hmm. how we live it and what we say.
Mm-hmm.
What convinced you? What changed your mind in 1981? What happened?
Well, leading up to that, there were things my brother got on. My brother was at that time dating a young lady who went to an Assembly of God church, and he was going there. And there, I noticed things were different with him and the way he was looking at life and everything. And I knew, I was watching, Hal Lindsey was all over television at that time, even on commercial television, talking about, the late great planet Earth and things. So, and I knew there was stuff going on, and friends, people I was friends with, they believed in God. They kind of like I wasn't really all that into it, but I knew, and I'd say there were nights I'd sit there or read the Bible in bed and realize that, I'm going to have to eventually deal with this issue, about God. That's how I look at it as an issue. I'm going to have to deal with it. And so in May of 81, my wife and I, we weren't married yet. We were living together. And I just happened to be watching the 700 Club. I'd been interested in reading things. I actually purchased a Living Bible a few months back and earlier in that year, and I was reading that. And then I saw that someone was giving their testimony about, Jesus, and was somebody in their 20s talking about mm-hmm. their life and how God turned it around. And he basically was saying, "I didn't think I was that bad." Or I thought, I'm okay. I don't do anything nasty. I don't, steal or rob or kill. But he said, then I realized that really wasn't the measure I was meeting anyway, because I tell a white lie here or there, or I get angry at somebody. He said, I'm realizing my words fine. I said, you're doing the same thing mentally that you're not, you may not be doing it physically, but you're mentally doing those things. And it stopped him, and he started reading the Gospels. And then Pat Robertson gave a altar call and said, it's time for us to come to the Lord and do something. And all I remember is deep inside of me, it's not an audible voice, but like an urging says, "This is the time to come home."
Yeah. Wow.
And I got on my knees and prayed and accepted Jesus right there. And when I stood up after praying, I knew. I could tell things were just gone. It was amazing.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. It was quite a thing. And just real quickly, my wife came home from work that night, and I told her what had happened that day. And she said, again, we weren't married, but she says, she's in her mind. She goes, "Oh, I'm next." So about a week later, she prayed. She was by herself and prayed and accepted Jesus and took him into her heart. And after that, God brought us together in marriage and everything else. So that's the basis, man. So it was incredible.
It's a real thing, and it's just not a mental ascent to something, but it's an emotional experience. It's a real thing.
Oh, yes.
that you experience God pulling you towards him,
mm-hmm.
and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
No, you're right. He grabs a hold of you. He's not letting go.
Yeah.
It was amazing. An amazing moment. Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing. And it is amazing that most people, everybody I talk to, has some kind of story like that. They had, in other words, they had a very real experience with God. And
yes.
It wasn't just an intellectual thing, but it was an emotional thing.
Yes.
God came and got a hold of them. Well, that's exciting. Well, so then you must have, you know, where does the radio come in, and how did you get involved with a Christian radio station in the mid-80s?
Well, I'll tell you, what happened after that is we got involved with church and a couple churches, and some of Mary worked for an insurance company, and people that worked there with her, they were Christians. So we started a Bible study, and with them joined a Bible study and prayer and everything. And for a few years, everything was going along pretty nicely. And then I really hadn't thought – I worked in radio in Houston in the 1970s. I did some radio down there and learned the ropes. I knew what I was doing. But I, believe it or not, on a Friday morning in 1984, it was in February, and I woke up, and out of nowhere – I got this, basically was like, you need to go to WCBO today and apply for a job. And you have a job. I'm thinking, really? I knew what WCBO was. I'd listened to them. I heard the music. And I also listened to Final Flight, which is a show I work with now. But then it was on terrestrial radio. So I hear Final Flight on Friday nights with Rich Fout. I like the show because he's playing Christian rock and stuff. So I did. I got up, got dressed, and drove out to the radio station. And, you know, out of nowhere, I walk in the door, and it's a Friday afternoon. Most everybody's gone. And the lady out front says, can I help you? I said, yes, I'd like to talk to the station manager, program director. My name is Gary Florey. I'd want to drop off a tape. And so she called Pat Patterson. He was the general manager of the radio station. And he came down, and I told him who I was and everything. And he goes, we have a tape with you? I said, yes, I do. And I gave him the tape. He walked down to the studios, down the hallway, went in one of the studios, popped the tape in a tape deck, came back and said, when can you start? I went, whenever. So I started 3 days later doing the overnight shift. And I all I could say is, Lord, that was incredible. And it really was. And I told Mary, I got home, I said, I've got a job working at WCBO. She goes, you didn't tell me you were doing that. I said, I didn't know I was doing that until I got up in the morning. And then it's like, go out and apply. And I just went where the Lord said go, and I did. I had the job. So I'm just like,
well,
and then it was crazy.
So for about, looks like for about four or five years there, you worked.
Those were
great years, and sometimes I would think that was kind of the heyday of Christian music. I mean, you know, I mean, Amy Grant and Michael W. Smith and Stephen Curtis Chapman, and then everything moving towards the rock, towards heavier rock, Petra, and then you've got Stryper coming in the scene. And It was all happening right then, wasn't it?
It was an incredible time. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, John, because not long after I worked there, I'd been there a few months, and Pat said, guess what? You're our new music director. I said, okay. He goes, so you can take care of the music. So I said, all right. And what we did is I formed a good relationship with Rich Fout. Of course, and there was a Southern Gospel show on the station, too, on Saturday, so I had good relations with those people, but got in touch with the record companies and had them start to send more product. The person who was there before I wasn't good on following up, so we started to get a lot of records in from all genres. By that time, I was a big Petra fan. I also enjoyed Resurrection Band. Those, you know, Glenn and Wendy, they had it all going on, so all that stuff. And your records, but so many, Amy to Michael W. to Margaret Becker, you name it. It was walking in the door with, you know, great records. And you're just like, wow, it was a great time. It was easy to pick what to play.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Now, things have changed, haven't they, Gary?
Yes, they have.
What do you think? How do you grasp that? What would you think of the major changes between now and those years, you know, the 80s and the 90s? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
What's the big deal?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I think a lot of it to me, John, when the label started to be bought up by secular companies or merged with secular companies, I'll explain why. You know, when Capitol acquired Sparrow Records and Word and everything sold out to other companies, the bottom line became product, not how good it was or what did it say. It's like, how quick can you get this out? How cheap can we record it? How can we get it out? How can we promote it? How can we get airplay? Blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, it was good. Yeah. It opened music up to other markets. But then you have to start kind of backing off a bit, maybe with some of the messages, because you're trying to get airplay on secular stations. You know, Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, even Stryper, a lot of those bands, musicians put out songs that were kind of quasi-spiritual, but it got them airplay, and, you know, they had hits from it. So, and I'm not saying they compromised their faith to do it, but I think he started to sense a different direction that music was going, because it was becoming part of the, it was becoming part of the mainstream. And, but at the same time, look back, you know, I remember in the mid 80s and early into the late 80s, I started hearing Christian songs, but what they call the Jesus quotient. How many Jesus songs are on each album? And I thought, well, that's kind of silly too, because, you know, Christians need to talk about everything. Yes, we need to talk about Jesus. Yes, we need to talk about God and salvation. But also, you know what? When Christians release records starting to deal with real issues, saying, you know what? It's not all hunky-dory and all kinds of fun and love, and you just get saved in your la-la land, and you start, people still get depressed, people still get sick, all these other things. And I think it was great that Christians were starting to address that on some of the records, and those are the records that got accused of being, well, they're just compromising your faith and everything else. And today it's all, you know, to be honest, radio today, it's all praise and worship 24/7.
Yeah.
And I am not against praise and worship, so don't, you know, send me a nasty letter, send John a letter. He's not in the praise. I am, but I don't need to hear it 24/7.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I feel that way too. But in some ways it's good now, because everything is so diversified and it's so spread out, so that a Christian, you see, it used to be in 1980, if a Christian had music or an album, well, he would of course, come record for a Christian record company. You know what? It would have to be, a lot of it would have to be very clearly Christian in order to be on that radio station. And now it doesn't matter. No one checks that anymore. No one cares.
Nope.
So, you too, for instance, you know, Bono's definitely a believer, and he's worked his faith into a number of their songs, but that's not the forte. No one thinks of them as a Christian group. And so the world it's changed a lot. And to me, that's a good thing, because, that means that the message can somehow get out in a very real way through people's artistry. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
I remember the first time Jars of Clay had a hit on regular radio, you know, the flood song. I had to pull over. I was in my car and I had to pull over because I was crying. I was just so good, you know, to hear something like that. And that's something we've been hoping we'd be able to eventually get music out to the world that had to be heard, because it was good. It was just too good.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I so agree. It's such great music, you know, and you have to have your ears open to hear different things, because, you know, I remember I'm a kind of person that can play, you know, some Keith Green song or something, and then 20 minutes later I'll listen to something about Bruce Coburn. So it's you have to be willing just to open your ears and hear what's out there. And because there are things being said today through Christian musicians or just musicians in general that deserve a listen because they're saying something important.
Yes.
And sadly, it's not on a lot of terrestrial radio, but most people, I can't think of many people I know that listen to terrestrial radio anymore. It's all internet or your own little podcast or your own little mix on your CD or your little MP3 player. So,
well, Gary, do you have any secrets for finding that? I mean, you know, it's not like you can, if you want to find a Christian song, you go to Christian music. Well, you don't do that anymore. Where are you able to find some of this stuff?
I find a lot of it on, if folks, I recommend you go to Bandcamp, bandcamp.com. A lot of Christian artists on there selling their albums and songs directly. I just downloaded, in fact, last week I downloaded a song by a gentleman named Josh Gates called Lifeblood, and it's great. It's a great song. And I have come across other bands there and other people that solo people I didn't know about. And I you can sample their music and decide if you want to purchase it or not. I'm like, it's great. I'm finding wonderful songs out there that I never knew existed, and most people don't know they're out there because we're all, quote, waiting for radio or some satellite group to play, and it's not always going to be the truth anymore. People, you have to go out and make your own playlist. I'll tell everybody that. You got to make your own playlist, and it's out there. And, you know, John, you won't go broke doing it either. I mean, you can buy some songs for a buck each. So you're not going to go flat out broke in doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
are you playing?
If you don't really...
On your radio, are you playing some of this stuff? Are you playing some of the new stuff
Right. On Final Flight, yes, we do. We play a lot of classic songs, but we also play newer music because it fits what we're doing and it fits the outreach. It fits what we're sharing. And I think that is the best thing about what's happened there. Rich Fowle unfortunately went home to be with the Lord about 10 years ago. His wife, Karen, who's a wonderful woman of God, she's teamed up with myself and Steve Chapelier, who also worked the show as a volunteer back in the 80s. And with other people have come aboard and we've put together a show. Yes, we'll interview people like yourself and other people. Then we also interview more contemporary people. And yes, we'll play newer songs because we'll listen to say, that's good. Why not play it? And we know very few people are going to play these songs, not because of, they have their own little idea, but half of them don't know it's out there. You have to really – I spend time every week, John, no matter who it is. I spend a few hours every week just listening to new music and see if there's something I can use for my show or just listen for personal pleasure. So that's what you have to do, and it's worth it. You know, a lot of us I wish there was great music out there. Well, there is, but you got to hunt it down. It doesn't get served up on a plate for you anymore.
Bandcamp.com. Right?
Bandcamp.com is where you need to go. Right.
You got
a lot
some
of stuff there.
I got some of my songs on Bandcamp. Yeah.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. That's where I find some of your stuff, John. I find it on Bandcamp.
I know.
Can't walk into a music store anymore and say, where's the John Fisher records? They go, who?
Right, right.
Well, don't feel bad, John. If you ask about Petra, they go, huh?
Right.
Or Striper, they may know, but the rest of them, no. it's funny how people look at that, but I'm telling you, there is music out there that will challenge your faith and also help you grow. It's out there, and people need to take advantage of it. You know, you can find music that you'll enjoy that will bless you, and there's more than that, but obviously, you know, folks, just follow your heart and let the Lord lead you to some good music. He will do it.
Beautiful, beautiful. Gary, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for spending a little time with us.
Thank you for having me on, John.
This was great. This was great.
All right.
I hope we get together again sometime.
I would love that, John. Whenever you're ready, let me know. And Final Flight Radio on Mixcloud. I'll give you that quick plug. Final Flight Radio on Mixcloud, and we're playing John's interview I did with him right now. So get online. You won't miss it.
Beautiful. Final Flight Radio on Mixcloud.
Mixcloud,
right?
M-I-X-C. Yep, Mixcloud. You can't miss it.
Cool. Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Gary, for sharing with us. And God bless you and your work as you continue.
Well, God bless you, John, and thanks for having me on. And hopefully it's not the first time we'll cross paths. Hopefully again soon.
Amen. That's great. Okay, my friend. Well, there you go, folks. That was it. Gary Flory from Columbus, Ohio. And a lot of experience in radio and Christian radio. And some good advice and some great memories. Thank you, Gary, for being with us. God bless you. Join us again next week for Blog Talk Radio on The Catch.